You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Good morning to Chris Collins. He's with the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's great to be here. It's humid.
It's way humid.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's all right. We'll make it.
What's your position over at the...
I'm the executive pastor at OVCN. I've been in that position full-time for 4 years, and I've been on church staff part-time about 3 years previous to that. And as a whole, my family's been a part of the church 10 years today.
Wow.
We pulled into town 10 years ago, August 1st. So this is always a surreal day for us. And I thought, let's celebrate it on the radio with Chris.
Now, it's so interesting. You told me off air that you went to school for radio broadcasting.
I did. Yeah, I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer for a Major League Baseball team. I was a high school athlete, college athlete, and I love sports. And I thought, man, if I can get paid to just hang out and talk about baseball all day, let's do that.
And you know something? You already got it. You can do it.
Yeah.
You got the presence.
Oh, well, thank you.
You got the delivery.
There we go. I appreciate that. I practiced all night for this.
Well, obviously, you know how to talk in front of people.
Yeah, that's a prerequisite, I think, for being a pastor. Yeah.
So let's talk about the making the jump from baseball. What was your position in baseball?
I played shortstop.
Shortstop, okay.
Yep.
So how'd you go from shortstop into the pastor world? Talk about that transition.
So actually, when I graduated college, I became a coach and a mentor, who later became a mentor of mine, my head coach. One of my best friends said, hey, why don't you stay on and be a graduate assistant coach? And I thought, well, I don't really want to do that, but they were going to pay for my master's degree. And I thought, that's too good an opportunity to pass up. So I'll stay, I'll do that. And after about a week of being in that position, I realized, man, this is a great thing to do. And if I can stay and be a part of the game, compete for on a regular basis, and coach, help shape and mold young men and do that at a Christian university, I thought, man, this is a calling just like anything else. And I just fell in love with coaching. And so put the broadcast thing to the side and began a coaching career. And in year nine, I got a call from a buddy of mine, a guy named Brian Beltramo. Brian Beltramo used to be the sports director over at Channel 4 here in town.
I remember that name.
That's right.
Sure.
And he was the guy I did a high school internship with when I was pursuing broadcasting, and he had become the state director for Fellowship of Christian Athletes. FCA does character and spiritual development in sports and high schools, colleges, and he called and said that he was looking to expand staff in Tucson, and I came to his mind, and he asked us to pray about it, and we did for about 6 months and finally felt like this is what the Lord was leading us to do. So we packed up the family on my wife's birthday, July 23rd, 2012, which is never a good idea, drove across country in the extreme heat and pulled into town August 1st and said, hey, honey, this is beautiful, isn't it? 200 degrees.
Well, if the missus can buy into it on August 1st, then you're
that's
okay
right.
The rest of the year.
So Sharon was all in, and we knew what it was. We knew what God was calling us to do. So we came, and that's what we came to do. And then when we got connected with the church, and I met Craig Coulter, our senior pastor, and began a friendship and a mentorship that eventually led to him saying, hey, I really think you should come work for the church. So that's how I ended up there.
Where'd you meet your missus?
At school, at chapel. We had chapel services on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
You mean you can meet nice girls at chapel?
You can, and it was actually a really funny story. We were sitting next to one of my teammates who had actually already gotten married. He was in his senior year, and he'd gotten married the summer before, and we were sitting in chapel, and he wanted a couple to double date with. So he looked over at Sharon and said, hey, do you like my friend? And then he looked over at me and was like, hey, do you think my friend's pretty? And that's kind of how it started. So we went out on a double date, and the rest is history. Here we go.
So executive pastor, what's your duties as an executive pastor?
I'm in charge of ministry alignment in our context. Every executive pastor probably has a little bit different feel, but I don't handle the business side of the church as much, although I am a part of that with our executive team. My main purpose is ministry alignment. I work with our pastoral team, try to make sure that all 10 of our pastors are going the same direction, that all of our ministries are going the same direction, fulfilling our mission, our vision as a church for what God's called us to do. And then probably unique to an executive pastor position, I preach about 12 times a year. So not all executive pastors preach, but that's part of my duties.
How are you doing on preaching?
I'm average.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Always
right.
Trying to get better.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think that's ever mastered. So
if we're going to score your preaching, what's your strong points?
Man, I think I'm passionate. and hopefully I'm passionate about biblical truth and the right things as we present that every Sunday to our congregation, try to lead us in the right direction. So I think no matter what I'm doing, I'm pretty passionate about it.
Talk about the growth of Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, because I've been here since 95.
Yep.
So there's been lots of growth and changes and expansion.
Yeah, incredible growth. Yeah, so Craig Coulter came to be our senior pastor 22 years ago, and from that, at that moment, we were in the middle of a building project with our current sanctuary that we're in now. It wasn't completed, but they were running three services, about 450 people in a small sanctuary that we had at that time. We moved into our larger sanctuary now that I think many people in the town of Oro Valley have been in, either because of a town council meeting or an event or a Oro Valley Police Department graduation or the firefighters group comes
in.
One
of the smartest things you guys ever did was open up the church hall to the community.
Yeah, well, we want to. We feel like that's what churches should do, right? We're not just using our buildings on Sunday. That's a waste of resources, in our opinion. And we want people to experience the love of Christ in everything they do. So anyway, from that time, you know, in the last 10 years or so, we've grown from a congregation of about 800 or 900 to now on a weekend. We run about 2,400 people. That includes a pretty sizable online audience. And that dynamic has even changed coming out of COVID. But we include those people. We tell them all the time they're part of our church family, and we minister to them as best we can online.
What's the demographic makeup of the church? How would you describe the you know, ages, families?
Yeah, so it used to be we were a traditional church. Obviously, we reflect the community around us, and a lot of retired folks, a lot of people in the last few chapters of their life call our church home because of some of the things we're doing. But that dynamic's changing dramatically. One of the things we're discovering at our church is that young adults talk to other young adults.
And
when one comes the next Sunday, if they had a good experience, they'll be...
You mean they're tweeting this to each other?
There'll be 10 more. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. Snap-facing or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Snap-facing.
Yeah,
I like
right.
That.
So they talk, and so our largest growing demographic right now is young families. Families in their 20s or early 30s that have a kid or two or three, and they're coming, and they see what's going on and what's being provided for their kids and for their teens, and that's really important to us. We feel like it's the future of not only the church, but of our community, and we want to invest in them. And so I think families see that and they're really getting connected. So
you guys came back on my radar again because I was at a town council meeting earlier this year where I was voicing some views, as we say, to the crew. And there was a discussion that just started about you guys expanding sports facilities.
That's right.
So talk about the plan to expand sports facilities and why.
Yeah, so the why really is, if you look at churches usually pick something that they're going to do for the community. And we have many churches in our area that they have schools, they have daycares, they have preschools, they have Mother's Day Out programs, and all of those are designed, I think, to reach into the community and pull people to your campus. And what we've decided probably 5 or 6 years ago is that we want to do that through the platform of sports. Obviously, I'm bent towards that. Our senior pastor, Craig Coulter, was a college soccer player. And
someone knows how to play a real game.
There we go. Yes, exactly. Not like the baseball guys. But we
it's,
feel
it's a joke on this show. I used to play baseball forever, yeah. And I can't watch baseball anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm a soccer nut. So.
Yeah, I've heard that. So nobody's perfect, Chris.
Thank
That's
you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. A lot
so,
of forgiveness.
Yeah. We've just decided that sports is the platform that we feel like we want to use to reach our community, to introduce people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and to encourage them in spiritual and character development. We feel like there's a need for that. There's lots of programs that do that, NYS and YMCA, they do those type of things, but their spiritual component is missing, and we feel like that's the difference maker for people. And so that's the why. And the reason we're in this now was 2 years ago in the middle of COVID, we had an opportunity to buy an adjacent property and expand our current campus footprint to just under 30 acres. And so we've got acreage.
This is to the north of you?
It was actually between. We had two properties. We had our current, our existing property.
Oh, that's right. There's a little one.
There was a church next door that sold us their property because they moved to a different area. And then there was a residential property in between those. And that was the property we had the opportunity to purchase. And so now we've got this land. Most of it abuts up against Calle Concordia and CDO High School on the west side of the high school.
Gotcha.
And we've got this plot of land that we thought, man, we really need some facilities where we can do ministry and impact our community. And
so I know some of the neighbors are a little miffed.
There's
right.
Yeah, a little miffed is a good way to put it.
You know, it's morning radio here.
Yeah.
It's because they'll say, I was there at the meeting when they were talking about it, right? They're like, oh, CDO has facilities, but the public really can't use them. They're locked down.
Yeah, there's the schools will tell you there's not enough facilities for anything, but that's actually what we currently do. We rent facilities through AmFi to run our sports leagues. We've been running sports leagues now for 4 years. We've used Upward Sports and FCA Sports as partner ministries, and starting this year, we're actually going on our own. We're OVC in sports, and we've got our own programming and volunteers.
What kind of sports are you playing?
Right now, we're flag football and cheer. It starts this Saturday. We've got 90 football players and 60 cheerleaders.
Beautiful.
And we're using Wilson K-8. We have used Cross. We've used Painted Sky.
As a guy who's been active with AYSO soccer as part of my thing, working with AmFi schools is very expensive.
It's a little bit expensive, but also a little bit frustrating because there's a disconnect in that process. The local school actually doesn't dictate the rental. The district does. And so I was actually 2 years ago in the middle of basketball. We showed up for our Tuesday night practice. We walk into the gym, and there's a science fair set up. And that, it just kind of illustrates.
They're multitasking, baby.
They are. They sure are. So we did dribbling drills around the volcano and, around the other science experiment. But, no, so that's some of the frustration. When you don't own your own facilities, you can't dictate the schedule, and you can't program it the way you want. What we're looking for is what we call an inventory of time and space. We've got a field that we have planned. It's just an open field. It's larger than a soccer field, but we can do anything that you can do on grass, and we want to do that there. And then we've got a four-court gymnasium that is on the plan right now. And the neighbors that you spoke about are adamantly against this. They've coordinated a group effort. It's about 14 homeowners that join our property in some form or fashion. They've been very respectful, very organized. They haven't done anything shady or underhanded. They're just relentless, and they've been very open and upfront with the town council, with town planners. They email, they call, they show up to town council meetings, and they voice their concern on a consistent basis that this is somehow going to alter and change the makeup of their neighborhood forever. And I think speak to our motivation, and I think they make some assumptions that are not true, but they keep repeating them. And in our view, over time, they've made a little bit of a difference with the town management team, who seems to respond to every one of their concerns and force us in our proposal and in our plan to try something drastically different. So
the other thing, like, Mary, I keep telling you that I'm being basically bombarded with polls. Everyone's showing me a poll. And the number one thing that I have seen as a common thread on the polls is everyone's undecided. Right? They'll say, oh, my guy's ahead by whatever. And then you see, oh, undecided's 48%.
Right.
That's right. A hell of a number for undecided.
And so, my personal opinion is I think they're not getting a lot of poll participation. When they call in, when they call you, I think a lot of people are just letting that go to voicemail. So I think they're – that's just my sense of the thing is we get so much telemarketers, whatever, people ignore their phones anymore.
Well, right. And so think about what you just said, right? You're getting spammed on calls and text messages from campaigns, right? Especially the ones using the big marketing, you know, political marketing agencies that are just bombarding you. These are the same people trying to get a poll done, and they're already turning you off even more from answering your phone that has anything to do with political, right? So it's like a vicious cycle. So
I definitely think you're onto something as far as, you know, you made the observation over the weekend and just now on the huge chunk of undecided voters. And so, yeah, I think the polls are, not the Bible truth at this point.
A good friend of the show who really liked one of the attorney general candidates shared, hey, look at the movement this bro's made since early of last month, right? And then I looked at the sample, and it was 500 people in the entire state of Arizona. And you're kind of going,
right.
Meow. You know?
So what I want to do, Matt, I want to bring you on in your news hat. You're Les Nessman. We put some walls up around him, okay?
Taped on the floor. It's okay. Walls is walls.
Let's go to Matt Neely on the Pima County Voting Center update desk about
a problem.
Which problem did you want me to report? Because there are two.
Let's start off with...
The training problem?
Let's start with the training center.
So the Tucson Sentinel reported that the Pima County Elections Department had to issue supplemental training to poll workers and, quote, correct an Elections Department training coordinator who taught temporary poll workers incorrectly. The worker's name is Jesus Federico. He's the training and elections coordinator for the Elections Department. Federico instructed poll workers in a training session that any voter could choose to vote a Democratic or Republican Party ballot in today's primary. Only those voters not registered with a political party, as well as members of the Green Party, can pick a Democratic or Republican ballot for today. Pima County has corrected training for the workers, notified supervisors, and placed a poster at all vote centers with the corrected information. And that was brought to the attention of the Pima County Department of Elections by attorneys for the Republican Party.
Rhinos!
Which is what Shelley talked about when she was here a couple of weeks ago, that they had reporters observing the training, and they're going to have lots of observers at the polls. And so there you go. It's paid off, having people pay attention to what's going on.
Now let's go to the next one, which is we've eliminated.
Yeah, the next one was.
And we'll go over this again with Joanne at the top of the hour.
Sure.
But
sure. There are 129 vote centers, seven of those. And that's more than 5% of the total have been changed since the Board of Supervisors approved the original list of locations in May. Pima County voters can cast a ballot at any vote center today, blah, blah, blah. County Administrator Jan Lesher told the board in a memo dated yesterday that the changes were necessary. And get this, Chris, for a variety of reasons. Here are some of the reasons that they had to change within 3 months, two and a half months. First of all, some of the reasons: construction was not completed in time at the vote center. They were going to make a vote center at places that weren't built. Signed contract was not returned. The location no longer wants to be a vote center. And the last one's the best, Christopher. The building no longer exists.
So again, here's the question: did these things make the list of vote centers that Constance sent out? Right, because that's the best part. So are there seven on there, and then we just find out from a memo
less than 24 hours before poll voting starts. That is crazy.
I was checking out Jesus Federico. Let's see.
That would be another question, because it did mention that he worked at social,
various nonprofits.
Nonprofits, I'm sorry, yes.
Let's see. I think this is him because he has got a lot of stuff about voting. He's got the let me show Matt the picture.
Wait a minute. Somebody else wants to sound off on this.
Is Bob here already?
Somebody, he's raising his hand, so I just have to find him here.
You sir, with the bone through your hair.
Nicely played.
Thank you. Well, he's got his he's got a dumb look on his face with his glasses, his bandana tied around his head, and his rainbow gay pride thing in the front of it, it looks like. He has a quote by Tupac Shakur, part of his whole thing. Don't take a piece out of my life or a song out of my music and say this is what I'm about, because you know better than that. Well, that's deep. Thank you, Tupac. So then he has that. Studied at the U of A, went to Desert View. Studied at the U of A, worked at the U of A, he said. What else do we got here with this? I'm so happy I don't have to hear Jim Buck call baseball games anymore. Stay on Monday Night Football. I think that's Joe Buck, isn't it?
Whichever.
More Tupac stuff. I'm a sinner who's probably going to sin again. Blank, don't kill my vibe. Wow. This is amazing. Let's see. He's got YouTube from the Anyone wants to watch? Anyone wants the Board of Soups? You can see the new elections equipment. Wow, this is deep.
So, does he have a LinkedIn page to see what nonprofits he worked at?
I'm looking for that. So, this is Jesus Federico, the guy who was hired. Just a few months ago.
The training coordinator.
The training coordinator.
The training coordinator.
Who's never done elections in his life was just hired a few months ago. Remember, we told you all these people left.
And that's what it gets back to, Chris.
Yes.
They rushed all this stuff in with, you know, just a couple months.
Correct.
And that's the only, even, you know, here I go. I'm pointing back to Shirley Scott, and people just said, hey, can we pump the brakes here and kind of do this in a more orderly fashion?
Racist.
It's just, and that's racist. Her own party called her a racist for that.
Racist. Dr. DeFilippo's here. We're talking about Rex Scott and Annalita Grijalva are asking the attorneys to figure out if they can sue the state of Arizona to control. Basically, they want to be the end-all, be-all of your Second Amendment rights
in
Pima County.
Yes. And, you know, I want to touch back on what Matt brought up previously. Some of this, if you look at the resolution that's in the agenda, it's embedded under the premise of, quote, protecting the public health and safety of all Pima County inhabitants, unquote. Now, if that were even slightly true, ask yourself, why would this Board of Supervisors not support a more reinforced and or a closed border to prevent the trafficking of opioids, namely fentanyl, and other drugs, which are the leading cause of death of Pima County youths aged 13 to 19 years old? Right? Ask yourself, if they're saying we need to protect the public health and safety of all Pima County inhabitants. So when I take a look at that and I see what their actions are, yes, they want to go after guns because that they're claiming that is, you know, we have to protect the public health and safety. Okay. Yet you have right in your face, right in your community, your children are dying.
So think about this. I have a lady who's been sitting on the TUSD school board for years. Right, who says she's a big advocate for youth. And then I have Rex Scott, who's doing this because he says he was in education. He's a big advocate for youth. But the number one thing, murdering the teenagers of Pima County, they don't give a crap about.
No, and quite frankly...
That's why, Rex, you really do suck. Now, my thing is, someone asked me yesterday, who will remain unnamed, what's with Rex Scott, right? I thought he was like a little more moderate... Go look at Rex Scott's Twitter page for the last 3 years. He is a hard left weasel, is what he is. Okay? That's where Rex Scott is. Okay? He is two-faced. He's Gemini. Okay? There's two faces to Rex. He looks like he's the moderate guy. He is a hard lefty. And he always loves to say, I was a Republican years ago and the party left me. Well, you really went... That left you and then you jumped... You went down the leftist Marxist pathway, dude.
He drank the Kool-Aid.
Absolutely. And maybe that's how you get through in the world when you're in education is to drink the Kool-Aid. So I'm not surprised. Some people are like, I'm really surprised Rex is going for this. And I'm going.
Yeah, no, you know, and when I look at it overall, that the analysis that I come to is that for that, and it's even more egregious because of Rex's background in the school district system.
Yep.
The children become pawns in the game. They are collateral damage to keeping the border open for political agenda purposes. That is absolutely despicable.
It is, right? I mean, think about it. So if we, in relation to people who have addictions, right? We were talking about this, right? What do you do? What's one of the key strategies?
You have to do two things. You have to remove the individual from the environment which caused the harm or damage and give them some type of a safety net protection, as well as you have to focus on removing that element that is causing the harm, the danger within the environment. You have to do the two simultaneously.
Correct.
The only thing this Board of Supervisors, and I'm talking about the four Democrat majority, the only thing they are willing to do is to look at Pima County. They don't care that the drugs are coming into the community. I mean, my God, look at all the money that we're going to be getting on that opioid settlement. We talked about this at the last show, right?
That's true.
Yes. You can put as many millions of dollars into a community as you want. You will never be able to address the issue until you remove that actual, that tangible element that is causing the harm. That is the drugs.
Right, because funneling hundreds of millions of dollars to your buddies that run nonprofits... right, with big bureaucracies. You can keep throwing all those hundreds of millions at it. It ain't going to fix it as long as all those drugs are coming through. But they can't, because remember, closing the border was a Trump thing, right? And they hate him so much that they could never, ever bring themselves to say, yeah, maybe we need to kind of bring some order and lack of chaos to the border, because then they would get, you know, that's what Trump would do.
Oh, but look,
but
what's
happened. It's okay to sacrifice the souls of the kids of Pima County on the altar of Trump sucks.
And that is the most egregious. Every single one of those four Democrat supervisors, okay, they need to take a look at and look at their role and responsibility in allowing the deaths of Pima County youth to increase because of these illegal drugs coming across the border.
So they're going to pull Dr. Cullen out of her hole and Francisco Garcia to say, oh, we need to have control of guns because this is a serious, we have a gun violence problem in Pima County.
Yes. No,
right? But they're not going to pull them out to say, what are real hard things to do to keep kids from dying from fentanyl? I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, you never see them talk about removing drugs from the streets. And on the agenda today, there's probably, I want to say towards the back of the agenda, maybe four distinct funding issues in regards to DEA, Joint Task Force, et cetera, funding going in for the Sheriff's Department. Now, how do you reconcile all of this? You can't. Because the biggest element that's there, it's like the elephant in the room. The drugs are still coming into the community and you're not doing anything about it, nor are you willing to do anything about it.
Yes, Matthew.
The same people who are saying they're carried about public safety refuse Stone Garden money.
Right.
Yes.
Correct.
Remember
stop
that?
Fentanyl,
well,
for crying
out loud. I'll tell you, it's going to be really interesting to see what this board does today. Because some of these items are ones, you know, we are actually, I don't know if people are aware of it, but we're in what's a federal designation called a HIDTA, H-I-D-T-A, which is a high-intense drug trafficking area.
I bet.
There's a HIDTA item on the agenda. And it'll be interesting to see if this board approves, the, I believe it's four actions for the Sheriff's Department, because some of these are the same actions that the prior board, the prior Democrats, I'm talking Bronson, Elias, and Valadez, voted down.
All right, I'm going to ask you one quick question on this, and then we're going to take a call from Scott on he's got a vote center story for us. If you were a bad guy or girl in this town, and you wanted to do something bad to another person with a firearm, how easy is it, do we think it is out there, for them to get a gun that you don't have to buy legally?
I believe you could probably secure an illegal gun within 1 hour.
I mean, that's where we're at, right?
Yeah.
All you're doing is virtue signaling. So this is where it really gets sick, right? Is they're putting you, the Pima County Board of Supervisors and the bureaucracy and the city of Tucson government have put you in one of the most dangerous cities in America. No cops, lack of cops, right? We advocate for an open border, right? We're letting fentanyl just rip through this place like you would never believe, right?
All those elements that create risk factors.
Correct, okay. Right? And at the same time, if you're a law-abiding person who like maybe should buy a gun and to protect yourself, Rex Scott and Adelita Grijalva or want to restrict your ability to defend yourself.
Yes.
That would be, I don't know if this is an official political science term.
It's called control.
Yeah,
it's called
control. I was going to call them sick puppies, but.
What is the one thing that Supervisor Christie keeps asking county administration about? How much FEMA money have we received? What have we done with it? Et cetera, et cetera. Well, if you take a look at the document that is attached in the agenda item report, it lists a website, and that website is efsp.unitedway.org. So I went to that website, and it actually takes me to the FEMA website where, yeah, and I encourage listeners to go and take a look at this. You can track throughout the United States by state, by county, how much money has been provided to each region.
It's going through the United Way?
That's what this, I did the URL and it directed me
good
there.
Good scrape,
okay?
There.
Okay, so here's what I did.
Or as Finucci said in The Godfather, just enough to wet my beak.
Your little pies on
there. Thank you.
So I found that I wanted to break this up because I wanted to take the COVID time period and segregate that from any other FEMA money.
Okay.
So I took in and I tracked it through, put the inquiry in for Pima County for the periods 2002 to 2020. And I see that Pima County, over that 18-year span, received $13,480,455.48 in FEMA money. Okay. So keep that in mind.
13,000 from 2002 to
13 million.
Thank you. 13 million. Missed it by that much. 13 million between 2002 and 2020.
An 18-year period.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then I took a look at the period 2021 to 2022. Now, I want to clarify this. The 2021 figures came directly from the Emergency Food Shelter website.
Okay.
The 22 figures are not there. So what I did was I went into the clerk of the boards and did a search on file list, which would bring up every single FEMA contract that was put before the Board of Supervisors for approval and acceptance.
Okay.
Okay, so that's how I derived these numbers. So when I take a look at what the feds are saying they paid Pima County between 2021 and 2022, I come up with $20,518,639.06.
So FEMA money for literally between 2021 and now is $20.5 million.
Humanitarian Relief Fund. Okay. Then I went and took a look at the clerk of the board's website because theoretically I should be able to balance these two figures out. Right?
Right. So because it's the idea that we accepted it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we've spent it or at least budgeted it in a way that it's going somewhere.
Well, the idea is that it went before the Board of Supervisors for approval. Because remember this, Pima County Board of Supervisors is the only legal entity that can approve and accept funding on behalf of Pima County. Unless they regulate, or I should say preempt that role over to the county administrator, that role is specific to the Board of Supervisors. That's why I always say Chuck cannot approve, whether it's Chuck or let's say Jan now, you cannot approve acceptance of federal money because that right has not been delegated to the county administrator. It is only to the legal entity being the Pima County Board of Supervisors.
All right, so in the last 5 years, sorry, last five, just
last two.
18 months. It's yes. Really 18 months here.
Yeah.
Okay, we've received $20.5 million of FEMA dollars.
That's what the feds say.
All right. Now, what's going on the other side?
Pima County, though, and the clerk of the board only reports $9.8 million. And I went, oh, wait a minute. What's the difference here? Because we should, the clerk of the board, if we've taken those contracts and brought them before the Board of Supervisors for approval, we should probably be close to $20 million, just like the feds are saying. So the question here, and this is where Steve Christie, I believe, is right on when he's saying, how much FEMA money have we received? And he gets these memos that, you know, they're kind of, remind me of the bond memos that Ellie used to get from Chuck.
Yeah.
The never-ending bond funds, okay? And so it's one of the things that I encourage Steve to take a look at this and ask, how do we reconcile the distinction between these two, what the feds are saying they gave versus what we have? And I'm going to tell you why this is important. When I was a Pima County employee back in 2020, I remember, because I tracked this, and I did discuss this with Allie Miller, the former Board of Supervisor. Remember when we received the first allotment of federal money of $87 million for COVID? That award was never brought before the Board of Supervisors for approval. I went in and did a check last night on the clerk of the board. Now, again, you have to go by what the clerk of the board actually notes in there. But I recall, I asked the supervisors, did you ever approve acceptance of that $87 million? No, it never went before the board. It should. Because there was probably funding it. Now, remember, that was, I believe, that was the original.
All right. So the thing that I want to just get out of this is that according to the website, the FEMA, the federal website and the clerk of the board's website, we've received $20.5 million of FEMA money in 18 months.
From the feds are saying that.
Right. And then when you look at the clerk of the board's on what they've received, it's only 9.8 mil.
Right.
So what are we, what
why the distinction?
Right.
What's going on here? And I believe that, you know, it, maybe it can be explained. Maybe it can't. But that's what Steve is looking at. Steve just didn't have these numbers like this. So now Steve has these numbers, and Steve can pursue this and say, are these in alignment? Are they not in alignment?
Sure.
And if, in fact, we are missing over $10 million in the Board of Supervisors, where is that? Because if you'll look at this documentation, it went to four, what are they? They call them local board agencies, so to speak. All this money is split up between the local board agencies that are on file. That's an interesting scenario. We need to get to addendum number four, which is the Maximus Health Service
contract. Love Maximus. He was in Gladiator. Just wonderful. Where he's killing people.
Amazing.
Yes.
This is a contract.
I'm going to do the whole rest of this show as Huckleberry. So
adding $5 million to an already $23 million contract, and this is for contact tracing.
Yes, contact tracing.
$28 million. Okay.
$28 million,
okay? What I find really interesting about this is you have to look at the document that they presented to the board.
Monkeypox or COVID or what?
love it. Okay, there are three line items for funding on there. One is for their investigators are going to be paid $64.48 per hour. The contract tracers.
Oh, hold on there, little missy. Hold on.
The sound of Matt Googling.
Hold on. How much are we paying per hour for these, quote, investigators?
$64.48 per hour.
Oh, that's me a chump change.
Okay.
Chump change. $64 an hour?
Yeah. And the contract tracers get paid $47.98 per hour.
This is the sound of me Googling job requisitions for Pima County contractors.
Looks like Matt Neely is not going to be here tomorrow.
However,
he'll be working as an investigator for $64 an hour.
However, what is most illuminating on this.
illuminating. That's a great word, Miss DeFilippos.
Is that there is a fixed monthly price for management support at $183,608. Now, normally when you have a fixed price contract.
Oh, I know about management support, okay. Little Philly. I do it all the time with my employees. I'm a big management supporter.
It means that you could actually put in, let's say, $100,000 worth of services, $150,000. But if you have a fixed price of $183,608 per month, that is what you are legally entitled to bill because the contract says fixed monthly price.
We're going to talk about Pima County. One of the things they had a problem with is they ran out of freaking paper.
Just no words.
They ran
no
out
words,
of paper at various places.
What is with that?
So, hey, what's with all this running out of paper stuff, Jerry? Look, they had no idea. They had no idea, right? And especially with the newbies, right? Running the place across the board. Right, the guy training poll workers was the leftist nonprofit guy, Jesus Frederico, who gave bad instructions and training. Right. So just like this thing, right? We know of spots like the Oro Valley Library is very public. A lot of people use it. They get it. Boom, library. Some of the churches, and I mean, Casas Adobes is pretty huge, right? But if you don't go to church there, maybe you're not thinking of that, right? But then right up the road, Sergio said that Wilson K through 8 was a voting center. Well, Wilson K through 8 is 2 minutes to the north of Casas Adobes, and both of them are 3 minutes to the west of the Oro Valley Library. So anyway, in addition to Pima County running out of paper, what do you do? Well, you order the triple amount of paper that you thought you may need at your worst thing and be ready. Running out of paper is a joke.
Doesn't really expire, does it? It's not like a carton of milk or something that it wouldn't be useful some other time.
Hold on. I've timed it out. Constance, press conference in 3.5 hours. What's the chances we will hear the word supply chain?
I'm sure it's Putin's fault.
Supply chain.
Yeah.
Supply chain. Now, Pinal County, worst nightmare, especially in the Saddlebrook area, because right now, some of the Freedom Losers are leading some other people up there. About 2-ish or so early afternoon, Pinal County ran out of Republican ballots. There were people who walked to the thing and they said, I'm sorry, we don't have any ballots. It's a nightmare. There's going to be legal crap. Ducey might not be able even to certify an election if they don't figure that out.
Pinal County has a real problem on their hands because they messed up all those ballots for, it was a Superstition or Apache Junction, Superior and Green, Santan Valley, two of their incorporated cities. They messed up a big chunk of their ballots that they sent out for early ballots.
Just got a text from Bo Lane. He said it's a teachable moment.
Thank you. the Pinal County recorder or election, they should just say, okay, we're out. I just resign.
Let's go right to the phones. Pima GOP chairwoman Shelley Keitz calling in. Shelley, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Chris?
Not too bad. How are you doing? It was a little bit of a wild day yesterday.
Yes, it's been wild since about last Thursday.
Thank you. I bet.
Yeah, so it's been pretty exciting.
Tell me about the Pima County running out of paper.
Yeah.
Who knows? So is the party going to have a paper observer for next election?
well, you know what? Pima County did run out of some paper, which is what we needed to print the ballots, which was way better than Pinal County running out of the ballots. But with that said, we were able to get ballots. We were able to get paper to the various voting centers. And all in all, I think it was smooth. For a new cutover to a whole new technology with a trio of new employees, you know, Lesher, Ceceris Kelly, and Hargrove, and with them having understaffed organizations and new employees, we got through it. Do we have some work to do? Oh, you bet. And so that's what we're working on now. So we certainly were able to address the issue. I think the biggest issue that rose up right away on Friday, last Friday, was the issue about one of the trainers making the statement that, yeah, if a Republican comes in and wants a Democrat ballot, give it to him. That was probably one of the biggest issues that we had addressed by Sunday. So I was working with our RNC attorney. He and I put together, we crafted a document, we notified Constance Hargrove. The document had in it what our remedies were. In other words, this is the issue. This statement was made at a training. It is illegal according to the Arizona Constitution and the Arizona Revised Statutes. This is how we see this being remedied, and this is the timeline. And that went out, I'm going to say, probably about noon on Sunday. She kind of came back initially and said, well, and then she came back and said, yep, this is a big problem. By 6 a.m. on Monday morning, they had drafted their response for our review. We went through that. We made some fairly significant changes. Sticking to our timeline of getting this corrected by noon on Monday. And everything, that worked out. So having our attorney on ground working over the weekend, we got that resolved. Yesterday, we did have a situation at Fellowship on Broadway, which was an early voting center, and they had put a sign up on the roof that said, vote here. They were supposed to close Monday at 5 o'clock, and on Tuesday, some people saw the Vote Here sign, so they showed up. Ceceris Kelly, our recorder, said, well, let's not disenfranchise the voter. we'll just go ahead and take their votes. Well, no, you can't do that. So again, we had, unbeknownst to most people, we actually, for Election Day, had RNC attorneys here in Pima County on the ground. And I had credentialed them to go into all 129 vote centers. So we notified the attorney. The attorney went over. We worked with the county attorney. We shut that operation down. We sent our attorney out to Bear Canyon, which had closed because of supplies. We addressed that issue. So there were a lot of things going on. But, you know, the good news is I got this from one of our poll workers. My vote center performed perfectly. It was a great group of people who abided by the rules. I had no concerns with anything, only the absence of the provisional ballot envelopes, which were delivered, and now I understand it was a countywide issue.
We're having a exit interview.
Exit interview. That's one way of putting it.
With our boy Ray Ingenieri. You know him for Ray Allen for 18 years on this station, and he was started off as a weekend board op and moved up through management. 18 years with Good News Communications, and of course now with our friends at Bustos Media.
Mm-hmm.
And he's seen... You could kind of say you've seen it all.
I've seen it all. There's lots of war stories, lots of stuff on the politics side. I've met so many candidates over the years.
That's true.
I mean, just doing the interviews and running these shows, you meet everyone, and they come through here. I've talked to so many people. It's just crazy.
So, what's your favorite part of radio?
I think honestly, the live stuff. You know, the first time that I ever came in and I saw a live show. That it's like something clicks in you. There's a magic to it that it's hard to explain, and it becomes kind of addicting in a way. I mean, you probably understand that.
Sure.
And so the idea that you're sitting here in a room, you know, when I did the traffic and news and stuff like that, you're sitting there alone, but you're talking to a lot of people. And that weird dynamic is, I think, what I like the most.
So I think Doug and Mary built it. You were a big part of this. And
yeah.
I think we've continued it with Patty and Amador here,
yeah.
Right? Is we have built this community.
Yeah.
Right? And that community is so strong, right? I was doing a little debrief with some of the new salespeople from Bustos yesterday, and we were talking about, you'll know the number better than me, is so like on a music station, someone might listen 8 to 14 minutes a day,
yeah.
The average.
Yeah.
Right, even though there may be more people.
Sure.
What's the average KVOI listener listen to?
For time spent listening, KVOI listeners will listen, you know, 3 hours, 3 to 6 hours.
Yep.
So you're talking when you get to our demo and when you nail it down, as far as TSL is concerned, we're one of the top 10 stations, maybe top 5.
Right.
Next to like probably KNST and NPR.
Right.
You know, this format causes people to listen for a long time.
Yes.
You know, and there's a lot of loyal listeners that just turn it on in the morning and let it roll through the day.
And through the weekend.
And they just want to let it, and they want it to be that way. And so I think on the programming side, that's why you have to think about, okay, are they going to like what they're hearing here and here, you know, from 6A to midnight? You know, are they going to like all that stuff? And that's how you keep them around.
When did you first become ops manager, get into management?
2012, so 10 years ago.
Gotcha.
Yep, so I did that. And then, you know, back then, it's funny because when I first started, radio's changed even since in the last 10 years that I've been doing this, you know?
Right.
But at that point in time...
No podcasts,
very podcasts
rare.
Weren't the big thing, you know? We did have some stuff, our recordings of our shows online, but podcasting
right.
wasn't a thing. The landscape wasn't as niche as it is now, you know?
And crowded, right?
And crowded,
yeah. Right?
Exactly. That's a better way of saying it.
Right, because of all the stuff you can listen to on Stitcher, XM.
Or watch or
Spotify.
Do, you know, yeah, and there's a larger attention span. So people would be willing to sit around and listen to longer things. Now, people still do that on really long 3-hour podcasts that we all know about.
Yep.
But it's just changed. The media landscape has changed, and it makes it a little bit more difficult for things to really penetrate the way they did even then. Yeah.
So before we go to break, I just want to say one thing. I don't want to run out of time with this later. So Ray has been, Ray's like the invisible glue, right? He connects all this stuff kind of operationally and spiritually sometimes around here, right? And he's been in the middle of, you know, he's been amazingly supportive of me and Joe and everyone through this. He's been there for Chris and Joe versus Emil Franzi, fracases, all of that stuff. And he's always done it in a even great spirit, all right? And also, like Matt was saying, right, very, very, very good teacher
of this
stuff.
Yes.
Right. Very patient. Right. And, you know, he so he's gotten calls threatening his life from weekend stuff. Right. He's taking complaint calls for me. Now he's sending them all to Patty because she loves taking those calls.
Yep.
She's standing 10 feet from me as I say that. Okay. And so, Ray, first of all, before, again, I really.
Yeah.
The best, man. I appreciate everything you've done for me and for Joe.
Absolutely.
And for all these.
Absolutely.
It's been a wild ride.
Oh, yeah.
A fun ride.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think together we've kind of like learned that this community radio thing really matters.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. It does. People listen, people care. And I think that's what separates us from the other guys.
Right. Know? No, it's correct. I see it all the time with our listeners. That loyalty and that caring, it's pretty impressive.
Yep.
And it's something that I try to honor and earn. I always tell the listeners I'm trying to earn it every day.
Sure.
Never take you for granted.
Well, and that's, I think, you know, if you're going to make the sales pitch, that's what your sales pitch is to people. That people listen to the station and they're loyal.
Yeah.
And you could get your business in front of, 10,000 people and have one person convert to a client. Or you could get your business in front of maybe 1,000 really loyal people and get 20 people in your business. What do you want?
Right.
You know?
And
that's it. You know, it's funny, radio, you meet a lot of these people and I've met a lot of them now. The guy that works in radio is more like a tradesman than they are a famous person.
Right.
You know, one minute they're at an event doing something and schmoozing, and the next they're in a transmitter.
Right.
Pushing a button or looking at wires or hitting things, you know, or they're under a desk doing stuff like that. And most radio people will have those stories, you know, and I certainly have my fair share of them. But yeah, that's the story of radio people. And there's a lot of characters, and that's why WKRP in Cincinnati is so true.
Right.
Because there's so many different characters.
I remember Doug talking about a guy who was on the engineering side that would kind of, we'd contract out for stuff.
Yeah.
He was just a little different, let's just say. And Doug Martin in classic delivery says, well, you know, he's been electrocuted a lot.
There's a lot of guys like that. You know, there's a lot of guys roaming around out there that have been in this business, and they're all characters. And it's different than TV because you don't have to look the part. You can just be whoever you want to be, you know?
Talk about building a talk station. What have you learned about? You and I have lots of conversations about programming. And
yeah.
So what have you learned is like the good success formula, you think, for building a talk radio station for 7 days a week?
I think, you know, it's tough. If you're not the legacy station,
right,
it's different. It's difficult. So you have to have a local talk, which was one thing that we have.
Right.
You have to have shows that people actually want to listen to, which is really, you know, it sounds very basic, but it's true.
No, it's true.
And you have to do your research and find people that actually have longevity. You know, you can go searching after shiny new shows that you think are going to be the next thing. But with talk radio, audiences develop over a long period of time. So you have to be willing to invest and play the long game with a lot of these things and say, okay, right now we're not getting a return on this person, but a year, two, three, four from now, if that person's still in the business, we will. And that's why picking people that have had shows for 30 years or 20 years is important, because they have established audiences and they just continue to grow.
What's a show that we used to have that you wish you had back? What's one of those ones you regret we lost?
Well, I think any 690 listener, which isn't a show anymore, someone that listened to the early days would be when Laura left. That was a tough one for people.
Oh, that's true.
You know, because she ended up moving over to another station in the market. Yeah.
Well, you can say it doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't. You're right. So that happened. And then, but I don't know. I don't know that I have an answer to that. I think Dennis's show was good.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different kind of talk radio show.
Yep.
I also think that you have to offer things that are different. You know, the big guy's formula is to offer the same stuff all the time.
Right.
And if you can offer something that's a little bit different, like Ramsey, which is a good example of that.
Sure.
You can maybe get someone who doesn't necessarily want the same thing all the time.
Correct.
And if you're not the legacy station in the market.
Well, and again, too, right? Not having Rush Limbaugh, right? I mean, Rush Limbaugh, never underestimate the Rush Limbaugh.
Sure.
Effect.
No, for sure.
The man was massive in his markets and...
No, absolutely. It's interesting. The programming side is interesting, and it's fun. And when you start talking to people and hearing the stories, and you know, you talk to the reps and everything, and you hear what's going on, there's a lot of stuff happening in the background all the time that you don't, that no one would know about.
Sure.
On the other side of things, and if you could follow the trades and see what's going on, but most people don't.
Tell me about so we got about 3 minutes left. Give me the Ray Ingenieri capstone statement on your career here at Good News / Bustos over the last 18 years.
Well, you know, I'd say when I first started, the important thing to me was to learn radio and to work for Good. Working for Good News was an opportunity to work for a company for 14 years that had a mission and a vision and values that I agreed with, you know?
Yep.
And in doing that, it was something that I felt passionate about and wanted to continue to do.
And also it was important that Mary and Doug were very faith-centered.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's important to what you do too. So
no, sure.
That was also a nice thing for years to do that.
Absolutely. And so it felt like you were working in a ministry organization when you were working with them. You know, we didn't just have this station. We had KGMS and we had the other stations.
K-Love
and the other ones that were doing things that for the community that were really good, you know? And in the last 3 years, I've learned a lot with Bustos. I've learned a lot of stuff on the sales side and the side that I never really had a part in with Good News. So that's been a really good opportunity as well. I would say that local radio is important. You know, local radio is something that a lot of people still listen to and is still really important to the community. And even if you know you're doing the MacGyver where you pull the piece of gum and the paperclip together and make something work.
Right.
If you can do that, then people will continue to listen and it's worth it, you know.
Well, that's why one of the things I love about our sister station, La Poderosa, right, is Gaston and Rolando are doing local radio.
Local radio, yeah. I mean, it's costly. And for stations that want to do the right thing, you know, for more other PDs out there, go local. You know, the less local you are, the less listenership you're going to have.
Right, because in the end, right, is we're talking about, and this is why what we always did trying to go super local on Wake Up,
yeah,
is we're not doing national, right? It's the idea that people connect and you're doing something different. If the other station's doing, you know, 12 hours a day of all national, they start repeating themselves.
Yeah. You know, and I've learned so much from people here like you and Bill and Mike and all the people that I did the shows for over the years.
Right.
It's been quite a ride.
Yeah.
You know, and going to the next thing is going to be fun for me because it's going to be different.
Sure.
But I've loved this, you know. This is what I used to listen to talk radio with my dad in the car and we hear Paul Harvey.
Sure.
And now I'm here and it's kind of cool.
All right. Well, thanks for all that you've done over 18 years.
Thank you.
You've done an amazing job.
Thanks.
And God bless you. And the next step in the rest of your days, we'll still be friends.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Like I'm never going to see you.
Absolutely. I'll show up at a happy hour.
You better.
All right.
All right. Ray Ingenieri, all the best, my friend.
Thank you.
Jim Rounds, economist on the phone. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Wake Up. So you're calling in today because of this bill, the Manchin-Schumer basically climate tax and healthcare bill. Explain to people what's the official name of this? What are they calling this thing?
Well, I think at this point there's been a lot of different names because it's no longer on topic, which is like what you were just saying, because they want to have, and this is how the federal government always works. They want to say we're going to invest in infrastructure, we're going to invest in workers, we're going to invest in this, but we're going to add these other six things on that you have to vote for if we're going to get the main thing through. And so, you know, we were dealing with the CHIPS Act, you know, to help, you know, promote manufacturing, you know, allow for additional expansion to occur locally. We'll have more nearshoring. It's really going to benefit Arizona. It's going to benefit the Tucson area quite a bit. And then they decide, let's go ahead and raise the corporate taxes across the board. And they want to implement a 15% corporate minimum tax. But the bigger problem is I'm sorry, even though it's complicated, but it's not rocket science. You don't have to just say, we want businesses to pay their fair share. Let's go ahead and just do an across-the-board simple thing because we don't want to have to spend the weekend working coming up with something a little bit more creative. If we put, you know, half a dozen of us here in the state together, I bet we could come up with an appropriate plan within 2 weeks. So I feel like it's laziness on the policymakers' part. But then you have unintended consequences, and I know that you've covered that before.
Tell me about, so when they're trying to sell to America that even in the unprecedented, just in a long time inflation that we're at that, you know, filters out, you know, basics like, I don't know, energy and food, which I love.
Yeah.
no one needs gas or food to exist, Jim. They're out there saying that this will actually reduce inflation, which seems to be counterintuitive. What does Mr. Economist say to that?
Yeah, here's basically in a very short story why it all started. And if anybody wants to look up a little bit more detail, look up the old Volcker induced recession from the early 80s. It's almost the exact same scenario. So we ended up with the federal government misreading the COVID recession. They thought it was going to be deeper. They thought it was going to be applying to everybody. It ended up being a very focused recession that was short-lived. And they put a little bit too much money into the economy. Then we had the brilliance of the Federal Reserve Board saying, let's keep interest rates at zero, and let's pump a bunch of money into the economy by buying debt. So they flooded everything. That helped create this inflationary situation. Yeah, the Russia issue has had an impact and other policies related to energy, but this poor management of the last downturn and the recent expansion contributed a lot. So now they're having to force a recession, and that's what they had to do, you know, a few decades back to get inflation under control. So we're not in a recession yet, in my opinion, but we are going to be in one by 2023. There's no avoiding it. That is on our sidewalk that we're walking down. It's not something that we can avoid, like some people are saying.
So why is two quarters of negative growth no longer a recession?
So that's a definition that is very general, but it hasn't really been used for two or three decades. What you look at is you look at the broad mix. We've never had a recession where we created 2.5 million jobs during that period. So we create 2.5 million jobs in the first half of the year. GDP is down, but it's down because of some unusual circumstances. It's a weird expansion. However,
is that 2.3? That's 2.3 off 19 numbers, right? We're just coming back from Corona lockdown devastation.
Well, Arizona, fortunately, came back early.
Not down here, buddy.
Yeah, there's certain parts of the state that are still lagging some, but you know what it's like. When you fall far, you got to grow by even more to get back to where you were before. So across the U.S., though, we're seeing this job growth, and we have some, you know, problematic income growth. You know, if you couldn't convert it into real with the inflation, it's different by income group. But I think right now people are arguing about the wrong thing. We are going to be in one by the end of this year, beginning of 2023, and that's not a good thing. And when is the economy the most susceptible to good government policy or bad government policy? It's when things are weak. And it, regardless of how you feel about tax increases and this whole fair share, you know, paying your fair share thing, you don't raise taxes when you're either in a recession like you were just talking about or we're about to be in one within the next 6 months. Timing has to play a part of it. And so we actually have had some leaders like Senator Sinema where she will say, I want to look at this more thoroughly. I need to better understand it. I love it when policymakers ask those questions because you can present to them, you know, the layman's terms, but then you can put it in the technical discussion as well. And I think the biggest argument, at least from an economist, if I was in, you know, a senator's position or whoever it might be, I would be saying, I would like to hear more about it, but the timing is wrong for me right now. And I think we can do better than just creating a very general kind of a weakly crafted tax increase that isn't really focused and doesn't really take care of any problems. So, you know, even if you're on the Democrat side of the aisle, the economics still applies to Democrats just like it applies to the Republicans. You don't want to be raising taxes on the front end of a recession. And I don't think they realize, I mean, we're talking about losing estimates by the National Association of Manufacturers. They're saying it's going to be about $70 billion in lost GDP in this next year. I think it's going to be almost double that. A couple hundred thousand lost jobs, I think it's going to be almost double that. I think they were a little bit too conservative because we're going to miss out on opportunities to do this manufacturing expansion that we really, really need in Arizona that's really going to benefit the whole area from Phoenix to Tucson. So let's not mess it up. We've actually done some good things in the state. Let's make sure the federal government doesn't ruin it for us.
Ralph brought this up, listener Ralph, about how it was just the numbers of counting the votes in Pima County, right? Again, it's like, where are we at in, you know, this is as of yesterday, that we were still, with all of our electronics, is that we were still one of the slowest counting counties in Arizona, which no one should be. I think we're at 66% of the votes as of, I think, yesterday afternoon. Then we had in Florence, Arizona, the county seat of Pinal, that they did their little press conference yesterday. And, you know, State Rep John Fillmore found it troubling when he went to check on people he'd hoped would vote for him. He was at the poll in Gold Canyon. That's over where the Renaissance Fair is, over in that area. People were coming out saying they don't have any ballots, and others, people were saying, I'm not even going in. The Republican primaries from KGON 9 had hot, high-interest races, so hot, the Pima County, Pinal County elections underestimated how many in-person ballots were needed. Again, they didn't know the Republican primary was going to be hot and heavy, Pinal County. I mean, what were you watching? Where have you guys been paying attention to?
So both times the guy says it was human error. The county attorney responds that it was human error and there's no sinister intent. Both times.
Is this the Rio Nuevo audit?
Both times with the running out of ballots and with the sending out 60,000 incorrect ballots.
So remember, after Rio Nuevo threw $250 million down the toilet, they did a, quote, audit. Right? Remember, they spent $800,000 for an out-of-state company to do a 17-minute movie that was supposed to be for a visitor center that was never built.
That people thought, that local film folks thought, at the most, 50, and more reasonably, $25,000.
I like how the local film folks cried more about tax credits than getting screwed over by Rio Nuevo. Oh, that's right. They had the same. They had deeds behind their name, so you guys don't get so mad. But remember, they did an audit of Rio Nuevo, and the audit of Rio Nuevo was exactly what you just said. That Maricopa County said. That's right. Pinal County said. Right. Is there was some bad decisions and bad choices, but no nefarious. It was ineptitude of $250 million. So that's cool. That's cool, bro. So, Charles Heller, Christy Simone, and you. If you don't know who Charles is, Charles, of course, is hosts, anchors 3 hours of radio every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with Swap Shop, Train Is a Coming,
mm-hmm.
Liberty Watch, and America Armed and Free.
You kind of get the twist. An America Armed and Free.
An America Armed and Free.
Thank you.
Thank you. And at the same time, I think you're a founding member of the Citizens Defense League.
I am one of the four. And one, yes, the founders of the Citizens
Defense League. Kind of like the four people that started Hogwarts, but it's about pro Second Amendment.
I call us the four men of the horse clips. But anyway.
So we were talking a little bit, we were texting a little bit about Pima County. And, you know, and I think for the next 1,000 years, this will just keep coming up because it's just human nature.
Right.
And you have to be ever vigilant, as we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
So explain, Pima County did a resolution to basically kind of instruct their legal nerds to look on how they challenge a part of the
state preemption. First, let me give you a set of context for
please.
It. The state is the controlling legal authority for firearms matters, and I could go into a dissertation on why it's true, but it is. So the counties, the boards, the districts, the towns, and the authorities can have firearm policies, but they can't set, and they can actually write ordinances, but they cannot have the effect of having a stronger penalty in law than the state has. For instance, the state makes it illegal if you're under 21 to carry concealed without to carry a concealed weapon.
Okay.
So if you're 18 to 21, you can carry, but you carry openly. You can't carry concealed. And you can't get a permit until you're 21. So the city can write a concealed weapon ordinance for people under 21 if they want to, because the state has one. Then the city gets the fine revenue if somebody gets popped for it. That's the way it works. But the city can't make carrying concealed a felony while the state makes it a misdemeanor. And that's what preemption does. Now, the reason preemption is in the law, it's ARS 13-3108 for people who want to look it up. The reason that's in the law is because almost about 80% the reason of why it's there is Tucson. Because Tucson, for the last 35 years, has bucked the state law and tried to do things that were against preemption, going way back, starting for the most part with Rainier v. City of Tucson, a test case about guns in the park. And that's what caused...
I remember that one.
Yeah. That's what caused all the activists to go to the state and get preemption strengthened, and then for the third time strengthened again in 2009 or so, I think.
I haven't heard anything from Ken Rainier in a long time.
He was at the county.
And then I saw him at the county meeting.
Right, yeah. And he's a wonderful human being, a very decent guy, an extremely loyal husband, wife going through some terrible health challenges, and he has been a loyal trooper at her side. Man, what an absolute example in life Ken Rainier is.
Now the other thing, let's talk about the difference between the city of Tucson being a charter city,
right,
and then the county being a subdivision of the state of Arizona. Explain that relationship, those two different dynamics.
Both the city and the county are political subdivisions of the state.
Right.
Any entity that is below the level of the state that is established by the state is a political subdivision. The Board of Regents is a political subdivision of the state, although they have a lot of autonomy. The city, there are 33 charter cities in Arizona, and they are political subdivisions of the state. Despite what Councilman Kozacik says, he says, we're not a creature of the state. You absolutely are, Mr. Kozacik. Read whose signature is on the city charter authorizing it. It's the governor. Okay.
Hold on. Charles gets a...
All right. Thank you. I've never actually seen that thing. I hear it on the radio a lot. But anyway, it's interesting.
$1.98 at Cost Plus.
Is it? Yeah, but it's a brick, you know? It's too big to put in your pocket. Couldn't carry that concealed.
I was going to say, you can't?
No, you can't.
You carry a 357, your 357 Magnum in your pants, and you can't carry this.
Oh, I could carry seven. I did once. I only did it once, though, just for make a point. Anyway, the point is, both the city and the county are political subdivisions of the state. The difference is the city is a charter, which is a mini constitution within. It's just like a state constitution is within the federal government. The city charter is like a city constitution within the state government, if you want to make an analogy.
Sure.
And the city has charter authority to do certain things that are in the charter. For instance, police the roads. Okay. But when it comes to policing, the state has what's known as the general police power to enforce laws, not the federal government. And the state is the controlling legal authority and has the police powers. The reason is the authority, when we became a country, devolved upon the states because there was no federal government. And it stayed that way. And the states then formed the federal government, just like the state forms the city. The state forms the county. The state controls the boundaries of all the county lines. That's a state function. And so is regulation of firearms. And what we did was, we being the greater right to keep and bear arms community, got the legislature to make the state preemptive against all the other jurisdictions writing gun laws. Tucson has constantly bucked that and lost. So, but the law never had teeth in it. Well, in 2016, we succeeded in passing Senate Bill 14, I think it's 14, 79 that in 1479 said if a city, a county, a district, or an authority violates state law, they can lose all their state shared revenue until they correct their malfeasance.
Right.
City of Tucson challenged that in 17, I think. And what happened was the Supreme Court, destroying guns, they destroyed 4,780 guns illegally because there's a state law that says they have to, if they're in saleable condition, they have to be sold through a federal firearms licensee or kept in the in a police reference collection, kept permanently as an exemplar of that type of gun. That's the only two legal things they can do with it.
Right.
Well, the city of Tucson violated that, and Mark Fincham submitted a referral to the attorney general. That's the way it works.
Sure.
The referral has to come from a legislator, and the attorney general went after it, took in what's called a special action, which originates in makes the Supreme Court the court of original jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court voted against City of Tucson's ordinance to destroy guns 7-0. And it wasn't an equivocal decision that the City of Tucson had 30 days to change its ordinance or lose $116 million, which would have bankrupted the city.
So before we go to break, I just want to make sure I got this right. Steve Kozacik in the city of Tucson illegally destroyed 4,200 guns?
4,780.
Sorry.
They paid $35 a piece, and the dirty secret is a lot of them didn't get destroyed. They kind of leaked back into the market in one way or another. That's another whole story.
Yeah, I was going to say is because after that, Tucson became amazingly safer. So
yeah, so well, but anyway, and in that decision, I'll close on this point. In that decision, the Supreme Court reaffirmed preemption 1331-08, and they reaffirmed 1479, which I forget. I think it's in Title 41 of administrative law in the state of Arizona. Geek though I am, I haven't looked it up recently.
And you sickened me.
I teach these laws, okay, and that's not one of the ones I teach, so I don't stay spiffy on it, but I know these because I teach them as part of my profession.
Certain areas of the world are known for things, okay? Paris, France, right? Croissant, the city of light, right? The English, tea, crumpet, right? New York, you know, New York pizza, right? Florida, very weird things going on there, right?
Florida, man.
go to New Mexico, right? And get some Hatch green chilies, known for the green chilies. And then, of course, Santa Fe and what they're known for art-wise and architecture. But one thing Tucson's known for, one of our strengths, is call centers. And the call center that they took the victory lap on is an absolutely vacant building smack dab right next to Tucson Mall. Now, I understand. I'm sure the pandemic, they did the classic, why don't you work from home? Right? And I think that's part of it. But I just think Comcast centralized it to another spot and quietly bled everybody away. Watch out on the quiet bleed off from the greeting card company to Alabama and other places. Watch out for that one. So this is something where, like, loser Joe Snell should be going out there saying, hey, everyone in Tucson, this is if Joe Snell really was a good guy, right? He would, at what he does, right? He go, and he knows it's happening. There's a bleed off of employees from Raytheon to other places. What are we doing to stop the bleed off? You know, it's a real disturbing story I'm starting to hear about Raytheon employees, the new ones. They come and then they're gone in 2 years. Because what's happening in the world is there's the high demand for what they do, some of these engineers. And then they got the Tucson, schools suck, dangerous. You know, they got to live in Marana and drive an hour to the greeting guard company just to, you know, or you could live in Sarita. That's, of course, the better place to do and be close to work, right? But that game's getting tired, right? And it got me thinking, right? Same thing, different day. Someone used the acronym SSDD. Now, someone said to me, a friend of mine, You know, he was talking about some of the interviews that Cafe Cito used to have on his show, right? He'd be like, you know, Edmund Marquez at the chamber or one of these chamber people or some of these local officials, right? Elected officials. And let's say they had the bravery to come on Wake Up Tucson, right? What's going to be different? What's changed, right? Look at this. You know, in addition to Cafe Cito, you got Bert Lee used to have all these people on for the last so many years, right? What's changed? If you sat there and listened to Raheena Romero for the last 12 years, or The Dude for the last 10 years, right? Or Shirley Scott slash Sharon Bronson for the last 48 years. It's all the same stuff. They keep saying the same thing. There's nothing, they're not offering you anything new, right? They're just saying the same crap, right? I mean, I heard Sharon say it during a meeting. Every time you hear, I hear Sharon Bronson say public-private partnership. I just want to throw up in my mouth, right?
Grab your wallet.
Right? Public-private partnership. Which usually means a buddy's getting a deal. Trust me, the Maximus contact tracing people, I'm sure that's a public-private partnership. Now, what do they tell you, right? We need more money. Right? I mean, what's you want tiresome tropes, Arizona Daily Star losers? Listen to these people that would come on Mayor Cafecito's show or Bert Lee or John C. Scott's show, right? It's the same stuff, right? We need more money. Give me a call, 790-2040. What's the tiresome tropes, right? We need more money. The Republican legislature is the devil. And governor is the devil. I'm writing this down. Okay. Don't talk about crime. At least Cafe Cito would kind of start talking about crime with them, and then he would say he was a storyteller and stop talking about it. I don't want to go there. I'm a storyteller. Okay. What have any of them, you've heard in any of these interviews they've done, even on TV news, man, I'm really worried about the poverty levels of, so their answer to poverty, of course, is we need more federal money, right? So this last 2 years, they think they're doing it up, right? Because of all this money sloshing out of D.C., but again, it's the same interview over and over and over again. So when I say we have the most uninspiring leadership class of a town, possibly of a region in the Western United States, how do you think this translates in interviews? Right? I'm going to have the chamber people tell me about the juggernaut of something. I mean, think about it. I mean, the chamber in the mid. I mean, think about this. In all of the pilferage going on, right? They make poor Michael Guyman go out there and say we're fighting crime by helping places rearrange their aisles better, right? And you're like, what? What? And so this is the thing, right? Is you could, what are they going to do? What are they going to tell me? Tell me something new that they're going to, what have you heard new out of these people other than give them more money and it's not their fault? How do you not weep for your town? You have your options when it comes to the misery of your town, right? You can either weep for it, fight for it, or ignore it, right? And they've ignored it. I mean, that's where we're at. It is the same blank, different day. And that's why it's so for me. We're gonna talk to the dude. What's the dude gonna tell me? What's he gonna tell me new other than Avis Enterprise is better? 790-2040. Let's go to caller Eric. Caller Eric, what's up, sir?
Eric just wanted to leave a message for us. He says on the subject of public-private partnerships.
Yes.
He's waiting. He's wondering why he hasn't gotten his invitation for the balloon ride into the stratosphere.
Now, it's true, right? So when we spotted these losers at Worldview, 20 mil, right? Literally a building, a tetherball court, which the Schmoo gets the prize for tetherball court, okay? I'm pretty sure it was the Schmooger that came up with that one, all right? The tetherball court, right? Right. Think about
the last 28 interviews anyone's ever done with Worldview.
Right?
From Jane and Tabor through Alfred E. Newman or whatever this guy's name is. Okay? The guy who's the head of it. Okay? What are they telling you different? We're going to do it this time. No, we're going to do it. No, this time. Oh, we're sending the day drinkers up into space and they're going to sing. We got the chicken this time. The chicken sandwich. KFC, Yum Brands, one of the world's biggest global brands in the world. They believe in Worldview and we're sending a chicken sandwich up. Oh, but it's not coming out of Tucson, which you'd think that'd be like, okay, here's, you want a little win for Tucson world losers, okay, is do the chicken thing here because then you could have the press come and cover the chicken sandwich. Right, and you could have had have Huckleberry dressed as, Colonel Sanders. Right, he's already right there. I got 11 herbs and spices. Look at me. We're gonna send one of my famous chicken sandwiches up into the nethersphere. Right, into the nether regions. Okay, right. We couldn't even do that because we built a tetherball court for balloons next to, I don't know, an airport.
In between an active runway and live ordnance.
And a bomb factory. So we're shooting stuff out of Cochise County and Page. And all these losers in the media, whoa, that's wonderful. That's visionary. What is? We had to send the Page? Population 12? We did more economic development for Page on the chicken launch than we ever did for Tucson. On our money. They're launching stuff in Cochise County. It's on their own paperwork and Page. But this is what happens when you shoot chicken sandwiches into a balloon into just the stratosphere. You know what that makes you? Space capital of the Southwest.
The story is the same, right? If you're gonna keep doing a show based on the characters that are still here, right? And nothing, so this is the thing, right? Nothing's changed or has gotten worse under their watch, right? So what are you gonna do? You sit with like Cunningham, right? And go, all right, Paul. Yeah, you're big Uber conservative Rodney Glassman left his Democrat chair and you took it over. That was what, 10, 11 years ago? And the city has steadily gone downhill. What do you think about your performance? Right? Because the thing is, in the end, right, you can't have an honest conversation with these people on the air. You can really have a conversation, honest conversation, possibly with them in private, but it'd be a little more honest. Right? What do you think the dude's going to say? Yeah, bro, we really screwed it over the last 12 years, bro. Right? Rahina Romero. Since you've been here, Tucson's become an amazingly dangerous place with less and less police. Do you think any of that's your fault? Governor, state legislature, Trump, governor. I mean, what are you going to get out of these people? Right? And then, what, you're going to interview the CEOs of Tucson? Right? Think about that, too, right? Really, you're talking about like the SALC class. What are you going to get out of them? Right? The ones that are real entrepreneurs have figured out either you play the game with these people,
right? And you learn how to grease the skids, right, with the county and the city. That's why anyone involved in land development is always going to be compromised. Or, oh, check this out. They make money in other places. They started in Tucson. They love Tucson. They have family in Tucson. They have roots in Tucson. But the 08 crash taught them you got to go to Texas, Phoenix, Albuquerque, or other places to make money. Look at Cody Ritchie at Crest Insurance, right? If you look at his posts of what he does, it's about Crest being in other markets. I mean, he's sponsoring the Cheyenne, Wyoming rodeo, the big one up there. Because what? It's more vibrant in Cheyenne, Wyoming for Crest Insurance than it is Tucson, Arizona? I believe it. Who knew that? Cheyenne kicking our butt.